We're going to wrap up our worship time here with a prayer on video. But before we do that, I want to let you know that this morning we'll be hearing from Reverend Shana Watson. She's with St. James Episcopal Church in downtown Lancaster. I had the opportunity to hear Shana speak at a mass service at St. James Episcopal a few months ago. And when I heard her speak and I heard her voice, I thought she had a tremendous voice that could bring value to this series on justice and righteousness that we're in the middle of. So we're going to hear from Shana today. Unfortunately, because of a lot of demands on her time through the church, several funerals that have gone on this week, and a lead pastor at her church who is currently dealing with some health issues, she's not able to be with us today in person, and she's very sorry about that. But she did us the tremendous favor of producing her message on video so that we can still hear from her today. So first, we have a video prayer to enjoy together, and I invite you to just center your focus on the Lord, maybe close your eyes, bow your head as we pray this prayer together, and then next we will hear from Reverend Shana Watson.
God, today as I pray, I ask these things. Expand my prayer to have faith of a mustard seed on behalf of those in need. Expand my expectations to think outside the box with hope for those who feel hopeless. Expand my heart to feel empathy towards people I never even thought to care about. Expand my reach to connect with the ones I thought were too far gone. Expand my vision to see the need in front of me that I am totally blind to. Expand my generosity to obey your prompting and give without hesitation. Expand my mercy to love without judgment or explanation. Expand my influence to inspire others to do the same. Expand my service to do more with less when needed. Expand my light to champion and love people of every color. And expand my mind to seek justice the way you desire, Father. All these things I ask, Lord, to expand your kingdom in my community. Amen.
Thank you so much to Associate Pastor Jeremy Toole for the invitation, and to you, Pastor Carl Landis, for accepting me as part of this fantastic series that you are hosting in the month of February called Zedek Righteousness is Justice Series. I am honored to be a part of this esteemed panel, and I apologize that I'm not able to be with you in person, but I'm certainly with you in spirit. So as part of this series, as I'm sure Pastor Landis has explained, is that we were each given a phrase to talk about and to present on to you all during these Sunday mornings. So my passage came from Micah 6:8. To act justly with your God. In other words, to do justice, which is a part of mishpat, a Judaic understanding of justice and righteousness and how they overlap or how one leads to the other. So my hope is that during this recording, I will be able to share my reflections on the passage, as well as talk more about when justice begins, and then go into how do we live and act justly. So there are three parts to my presentation this morning, maybe with some images and a little video if I can get everything to cooperate. So, and I will list my contact information at the end in the event that any one of you would like to reach out to continue the conversation about justice. Symbols of justice existed for millennia, stemming from Maat, the ancient Egyptian goddess of truth, justice, and harmony. She's often depicted with wings on each arm or as a woman with an ostrich feather on her head, all the way to the Roman goddess
Justitia,
or also known as Lady Justice. She's often depicted wearing a blindfold, holding a scale, and a sword. Some believe that the scales of justice means it is the measure, the balance through which one should enact both mercy and humility, that it results in justice, and that the sword, sometimes pointed upward or downward, is simply the power of justice and how the power lies within our ability to enact justice in a way that is righteous. Historically, there's been some controversy around whether or not the blindfold symbolized ignorance or turning a blind eye to real justice, but many have accepted that it means impartiality and it means to not be biased, and that justice should not be discriminatory nor hold prejudice in its approach to measuring righteousness for all of those who are weighed in its balance. And of course, yes, that is Batman, another symbol of justice, also known as the Dark Knight and known by many other names. I just thought that I'd slide that one in there just for, you know, good measure. So what is Micah telling us about justice today? What is Micah telling us how God sees justice in the world? I, for one, believe that justice cannot stand alone, similar to those symbols that we just talked about. How Ma'at says truth, justice, and harmony ought to be grouped together, just as Lady Justice talks about the balance of humility, kindness, and mercy. Justice cannot be justice all by itself. It can only happen with mercy. It can only happen with humility, because without it, justice is just judgment. I believe that Micah was intentional about grouping justice, mercy, and humility together in order for us to have the appropriate ingredients for the making of a healthier, more godly society. It is during this time that I'd like to share with you my initial thoughts and impressions
of Micah, chapter 6, verse 8.
When I first reread the passage for Micah, Micah 6, 8, is that justice cannot stand alone, but rather justice can only happen in relationship with mercy and humility. Because without mercy and humility, justice is simply hostile judgment. It's an ideal. It's not really justice at all. I believe that Micah was intentional about grouping justice with mercy and humbleness. In order for us to have the appropriate ingredients for the making of a healthier and godly society. Interestingly, in the text that leads up to Micah chapter 6, verse 8, Micah asserts that the Lord is pleading a case against Israel. And in the text, Micah speaks as the voice of God, as well as responds on behalf of the nation of Israel in this conversation. So first, he highlights what God has done for the people, and that God is making a case against the children of Israel. So as God says these quotes, he also reminds them of how he delivered them from slavery during their time in Egypt. He gave them leaders, Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, and how he blessed them through the foreign priest Balaam, even against the king's choosing of his own choice that he had put over the land, and also how he brought them into the promised land of Shittim and Gilgal. So God is recounting all of these works that he did on behalf of the children of Israel, and they continue to be discontent or express concerns, or as you all may have read in the entire chapter of Micah, that there are all sorts of atrocities and perversions that are occurring that, of course, are against the will of God. So in response, again, through the voice of Micah, Micah says, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul. He then says in his own voice that God has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So what does it mean to act justly or to do justice with your God? And I think the "with your God" part of it is a part that we often leave out. We often think that we have to do justice or take justice into our own hands, absent of God, absent of faith. But the prophet Micah is very clear that justice has to occur not only in conjunction with mercy and with humility, but it has to be done with the Spirit of God, the love of God. And of course, it has to be done with God at the center of it all. Because without God, it goes back to what we discussed earlier, that justice is just purely judgment, and someone is slinging that sword of execution as opposed to it being a power, a symbolic power, one that could possibly give life, cutting down sheaves of grain to feed communities versus cutting down one another. So with justice and with walking humbly with God, where does this all begin? How do we learn to walk with God, to act alongside of God, and to embody God in our lives? So with that, I learned only recently that our concept of justice is learned early on in our childhood. Some child psychologists argue that as early as age 6, while others say as young as age 2. Children learn how to discern between what is just and right at such a young age. They learn about fairness. They learn about how to receive, how to share with others, what is good, what is bad. And because of their developmental stage, they don't have all of the language or all of the words to purely articulate their understanding. So it appears a little bit more black and white, more dichotomous as they are young. But once they reach an age of maturity, most adults have settled in what is right and what is wrong. And that is the tough work, the hard work that we are all challenged to do today. When we think about race, when we think about gender, when we think about sex and sexuality, and how to enter into healthy relationships with one another, what does justice look like in those realms? What do we have to unlearn or relearn? What continues to serve us from our childhood and what no longer serves us in our adulthood? So with that, I wanted to explore a little bit about my own childhood, my own upbringing, bringing you into my world and how I view this text through my lens from my childhood, born and raised here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. This is the 400 block of South Ann Street in the neighborhood where I grew up. And if my mom knew that her house was in my background shot, she would totally be so mad. So no one's allowed to tell her, because I know she would be upset that she didn't get a chance to scrub down her vinyl awning. And the roof and the porch need repair. So we'll just keep this shot between us. Growing up on South Ann Street holds a lot of great memories for me. It's the home of my childhood. It's the home where my parents, mother and father, raised all of us, were children, and my mother later adopted more. It's the house where we took care of my grandparents when their health started to decline. It was a multi-generational household. I remember summers filled with cousins and uncles and aunts coming over for visits, for cookouts. I went to school right across the street from this house on the block. And I also remember it as being very culturally diverse. My neighbors were from all over the world, some first generation, some who have been in Lancaster for a very long time in the Southeast area, anywhere from people from Poland to Puerto Rico to the Bronx in New York, which can sometimes seem like a foreign place to some folks, but it was amazing. It was all languages. It was Italian. It was African American. My teachers, the same at George Washington Elementary, as well as James Buchanan and Wheatland, and on to Country Day. On my block in particular, it was just everyone got along for the most part. Of course, there'll be those neighborly flare-ups. As you can see, it's a row home framework on the block. So there are porches. And when you're sitting out on your porch enjoying the summer breeze and listening to the vehicles drive by blaring their rock and roll or soul music, it starts conversations. So we were always speaking with one another, whether it was about politics or equity on the job and workman's comp and injuries. So there was always conversation about equity and access that was taking place either outside on the block at the dinner table, whether it was amongst his children who were playing. I was more of a homebody. I didn't really like going outside that much. And honestly, I'm still a homebody and I still don't like coming out to play that much. But, you know, we would hear about people who lost their jobs and how it affected their family. So it was hardships and hard times was non-discriminatory. It was times that we all equally shared. And just as much as I had joyous times at my childhood home, it was also times of great sadness, a lot of loss. It's also when my father died when I was very young. So between both of my parents and my siblings, and him being the first African-American president of his local union, I really learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from him and his friendships with those who were not African-American, but Irish and Italian, and how they all came together over one common cause. So to talk about racial justice, if we are to look at the MICA text in light of that, I feel like I have a unique perspective and then shared, but unique in how I watched my father and his buddies model that. They would come together over similar causes and efforts and learn from each other. They would pack extra food for their lunches, whatever their own ethnic cuisines were, and share on the job. I mean, nothing brings people together like food and music and really good jokes. And at times, I think some of their jokes might have been inappropriate, but they didn't have anti-racism training during that time. So, but I mention all of this to say is that while growing up there, there are some things that, you know, I just grew accustomed to, socialized in. But it wasn't until my adulthood and my studies at the University of Pittsburgh, I studied political science and African diasporic studies, that I began learning about redlining and how neighborhoods were intentionally segregated based on race and economics. So people of color, Blacks in particular, and white people who were impoverished, working class, were always found on the southern end of the tracks or on the other side of the tracks, so the saying goes. And opportunities were often limited intentionally, not by chance or happenstance. So sometimes when I hear questions about why haven't we gotten over it, why can't we just move forward? Well, the part of the issue is that some of these things that occurred in our past continues to affect us today. It continues to hinder opportunities. And I'll never forget the quote that none of us are free if one of us is chained. And so often in our society and in our communities, there is always someone chained. So until we do that work of justice that Micah points to, we're going to continue to have these very difficult conversations, especially in light of all that is to be celebrated. There's still that undergirding, like, and there's so much more to do. So it's on South Ann Street during my childhood that my framework of justice was shaped and heavily transformed, especially in growing up in the Church of God in Christ, which is a part of the Black church tradition, where the preacher did not shy away from talking politics in the pulpit. So it was never an issue, or no one ever left the church because something was too politicized, because we all realized that so much of our freedom and liberties were intricately connected to the law, to the Constitution. Some of you may have seen 13th or study some of the amendments that supposedly emancipated us. However, we know that there were other laws and policies that had to be instituted to truly assure one's equal access and freedoms. And even now, there's still policies and practices around diversity and inclusion to continue to support some of that advocacy work. So I know that sometimes the conversation gets a little frustrating, like, when is this going to end? When do we stop hearing about it? Well, we'll stop hearing about it when injustices stop happening. God was very upset, according to Micah, in Micah 6:8. He was flipped. He was angry. He was enraged at the continued perversions of justice. And people in this text thought that they could buy their way out of it with expensive sacrifices. But God told them, according to Micah, that that's not how you get out of it, that's not how you get through it. You have to act justly. You have to walk with humility and act mercy. So all of these things, until we get them right, we'll continue to circle back around to the same issues that we've been struggling with for all of these centuries. So it is my hope that we too will continue to take the advice of Micah, of this particular passage, so that we too can be truly free. We have to free one another. Not one community can do it by themselves. We have to be allied with one another, similar to how justice isn't justice without mercy and humbleness. It's the same way with our communities. One community cannot be free until all communities are free.
So what keeps us chained? What keeps us from achieving that freedom, or what keeps us from walking justly with our God? According to statistical data, which many of you know, African Americans make up less than 14% of the United States of America population, and yet they hold almost 40% within the prison populations in the United States of America. According to the Community Action Program here in Lancaster alone, as of 2017, it shows a poverty rate of almost 30% of residents who live in Lancaster City. More Blacks and people of color are impoverished than whites, but still 30% of all people are impoverished within Lancaster City. There's even poverty among children. Poverty among children at roughly 40% in Lancaster City, which is still troubling, especially for those who experience adverse childhood effects, having to go to school hungry or without proper nourishment or clothing. But we are just so grateful for all of the programs that are in the city that can help city residents and their children who are struggling in ways racially, environmentally, economically, so that they will have a chance to succeed, so that they will have a chance to have access. If it wasn't for the kindness of strangers, if it wasn't for the kindness of teachers and neighbors, I don't know where I would be. I had two very hardworking parents that invested a lot of time and attention in us children, but it truly took a community. To me, that is how people walk justly with God. When they pay attention to those in need, when they pay attention to those who are hungry, to those who need to be fed and clothed, where there is no perversion of justice, but rather justice with the balance of mercy and kindness and humility. That's how we walk justly in Lancaster City during my upbringing. And according to the statistical data, we still have so much more work to do, but I have hope and I believe that as a community, we certainly can. In order to be and live justly, I think it's important for us to begin with ourselves first, whether it's the individual or the collective community, and in this situation, even our church. At St. James Episcopal Church, Dr. Cordelia Moise Peck, as well as Mr. Randy Harris, embarked on the history of our church. And while a lot of things were common knowledge, they found some specific instances where we had a history of racism, abolitionism, and anti-abolitionism, as well as diversity in missionaries, and as well as where we hope to go, where we were, where we are now, and where we hope to go. Our church was established in 1744, which means that we have both the enslaved Africans as well as slave masters buried in our churchyard. We have those who fought against slavery as well as those who condoned slavery buried in our churchyard. These are the scars and the wounds of our past that sometimes bring us shame and embarrassment. It is a difficult conversation, and it was hard exploration to bring forth some of this information because we had to name our wounds in order for justice and mercy and kindness to persevere. But this is what justice looks like. It's an outpouring of love to the community. It's an exhibition of our vulnerability to say we are not perfect. And yes, we are a community of faith. But in order for us to grow together, we have to go in deep together in discovering our past. And how do we plan to move forward in our future? This is how we act justly with our God. This is how we do justice.